Yes, that is the Lori and Julia theme song that we all know and love. But I've been waiting all day to play this one.
Sometimes it snows in April.
Oh, little Prince.
Yeah. It seems sometimes like it snows every April. Sorry, Prince. Yeah. If he was still around, maybe he'd change the lyrics. But yeah, another snowy April day.
Yeah. And you know what, Rocco?
Yeah.
My magnolia tree is blooming, so that is always a call to action for some snow to happen.
Do you remember? We talked about this a couple weeks ago. The week Prince died, all the trees in town turned purple.
The lacy trees. Yeah, it was so pretty.
That was amazing.
It does snow in April here, Rocco.
It totally does. And Lori's poor maze. Since you put that magnolia tree in, honestly.
Yep.
I think Gerton's delivered it. I remember like the whole story about the tree. It was a big darn deal to get it.
Because we took out like a 30-foot old pine tree.
And I remember this whole process. And then every single year, it stops the real good blossoming from that magnolia.
I might have to talk to you. I think my wife wants like some sort of magnolia.
Oh, you can get a winter hardy magnolia. Another one that is really pretty that I love that we planted the same time was an apple blossom tree that's just the blossoms.
Oh, neat.
You know, and that's really pretty.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's happening.
Anyway, boy, did I get a lot of texts and calls from people in other states saying, what in the hell, Minnesota? Mm-hmm. And I might have been on Facebook or might have been Cousin Michael. He's like, you're going to have to refer to your state as the state formerly known as Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you girls won't be yelling that from a red carpet. And I just said, it's a bigger problem than that.
I mean, it is.
It's just, it's very, so upsetting. Dante White's parents were on GMA this morning.
Yes.
And Robin Roberts is so good. I can't imagine what a difficult conversation for the parents, you ended up crying along with them.
You really did. And it's just a tragedy all the way around.
It really is.
We know the officer has resigned.
Well, the city council, the Brooklyn Center, the city council voted to fire both the police officer and the chief of police, and they both submitted resignations.
Yep.
The mayor, he was on Mayor Mike Elliott. He was, I think, on the Today Show, and they're hoping that will bring calm to the community. And last night there really was, there were protests, but it seemed to like by 9 o'clock had dissipated. Yeah. I was watching WCCO and KSDP and going back and forth, and Mike Max.
Mm-hmm.
He had reported so much from the streets last May and June, and they sent him out, and there was nobody out.
Right.
And he'd been to several locations. So that's good. I mean,
And the governor talked today because the state fairgrounds, the vaccination site opened up there today.
Oh, it did.
So he talked
that's
about.
That's why so many people are hearing from the state of Minnesota.
Yeah.
Because I've heard from a lot of people who got their notification.
Yes. So the Johnson & Johnson vaccine has just been suspended for a little while until they figure some stuff out, just to be extra, extra cautious. And people who were scheduled for that have been rescheduled to get the other two.
Mm-hmm.
And they are also, he said that last night, there was trouble. There was some looting going on, but it was 7 cars that went from area to area, and they were able to get and arrest these people who were doing the damage.
Okay.
With, the state patrol, the police departments, and some other things. So he felt really good about, it's a select tiny few people that are just doing the looting part.
And is there a curfew or not tonight?
He said the individual cities will decide, but as of right now, there isn't. I know the Twins are playing right now. They had a game that started 1. Rocco, what's the score? Because I know you know it.
It is 2-2.
Uh-huh.
They're playing in the snow. It looks kind of fun. And then the Timberwolves game that was supposed to be last night, I was planning on going to that game. That is, I think, about to tip off here at 3 o'clock, and no fans in attendance.
Okay. And then tomorrow the Twins are playing a doubleheader. And then I think back to the Twins home opener that we went with Dr. Crutchfield in the snow at night. Remember that?
It was so fun.
It was so fun.
It was so pretty.
So pretty, because literally in the dark skyline, there's this beautiful snow coming down. Everyone's freezing, but
we were in the Players Club, so we had blankets Champions and hot Club. Chocolate.
It was nice. It's called the Champions Club, and they come out with blankets and hot cocoa. It was really a lovely way to
spiked hot chocolate.
You know, when I was at the game Sunday, I saw a sign that said sweets are available right now. So that might be a great way to check out a game this summer.
Yeah.
Bring your family that you're bubbling with or whatever and check out a Twins game.
Well, I'm feeling like we don't won't have to travel in your bubble if everyone is vaccinated.
Yeah, go out and get that vax.
Yeah, no kidding. And the Johnson & Johnson, I listened to Dr. Hashish Jha from Harvard Medical School, who's been on the Today Show since all of this started. And there's like six women out of 6 million shots in the U.S. had some like a clotting thing or something. So I hope they get that figured out, because we have a lot of there was a lot of expectation for Johnson & Johnson to cover the arms of the world.
No kidding.
I'm one of those people, but I'm not a woman. So.
Right. And you and had yours
people,
a couple
but
weeks
I know
ago.
People who've got it. You know, like I we said, too. There's 6 million and there's a 0.00000, you know.
Yeah, no, a friend of mine whose last name is Johnson got the Johnson & Johnson. And
Which we like.
And I was
kind of jealous of people getting the one and done.
I know it. But I guess whatever one you're offered. But anyway, there were just getting back to Dante Wright for a second. There were protests all over the country.
Yeah, there were.
And I heard Sunny Hostin on The View, you know, she and Whoopi were talking about the fact that they both have, Whoopi's got a grandson, Sunny's got a son, and they both are teenage drivers, like 17, look like Dante White, and how worried they are. And Whoopi asked Sunny, well, what could be done? And she said, well, The House passed last summer the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act of 2020, which the holdup is in the Senate. And she said,
at the Capitol, at the national level, or in the state of Minnesota?
No, it's a national bill named after George Floyd. Okay. But it would take away qualified immunity from police and ban chokehold holds. But what she was explaining is that qualified immunity is the thing that makes it very, 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 very hard difficult to convict a police officer of any kind of misconduct, you know. And so it's just like sort of this blanket thing. And she said if that was a consequence, maybe people wouldn't make a mistake and pull a taser instead of a gun or whatever.
Right.
So you could contact your senator if you're wondering what you could do. And I know Barack Obama this morning tweeted, you know, how he feels that everyone's hearts are heavy over another shooting of a black man. And he's like, it's just a reminder of how badly we need to reimagine policing and public safety in this country. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
it feels very heavy in Minnesota. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah,
everyone I talk to is blue. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to cry. I think everyone wants to cry because... Mm-hmm. And it just feels like enough. And I think black, white, Asian, whatever you are, it's enough.
Well, everyone's imagine feeling being
it.
Black.
I can't imagine it, Lori. I can't imagine it. And I know
if you're two boys.
And that makes me even sadder when you think about it that way. But I'm just saying from my perspective, everyone I know is so blue.
Right.
And our thoughts are with, you know, Dante's family.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because it's just so sad.
It really
and
is.
So unnecessary.
It
so,
is.
Anyway, we have a funny, fun story that we can't get enough
right,
of
let's
when we
do
come
it.
Back. We're talking about Bridget Jones. It is the 20th anniversary, if you can stand it, of when that movie came out. And that movie, I thought, was just the bomb. And it was based on a book by... it was, but actually, it's kind of an interesting story. A la Sex and the City, how Candace Bushnell wrote a column for the New York Observer.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time, The Independent, which is a newspaper in London, asked Helen Fielding if she would write a column about herself and her single life in London. And she goes on to say, as much as I needed the money, writing about myself seemed really embarrassing and revealing. So I offered to write an anonymous column instead, using exaggerated comedic fictional character. And she thought no one would read it and she would be dropped after 6 weeks. Well, lo and behold, it was a big hit. She writes a book, and the first book was Bridget Jones' Diary.
So was her character, was the person that she was writing about named Bridget Jones? As a, was that?
I think so. Okay. And I think so in the column. So here's who they declined the role: Toni Collette. If people remember her,
oh yeah, we remember. We know her. She's amazing.
Kate Winslet was considered, but they decided she was too young, and Toni Collette declined. She was up for it. She was on Broadway at the time, though, starring in The Wild Party. Don't even know the play. Kate Winslet was very much considered by the producer, but they thought they were too young. And then they ended up signing Renee Zellweger.
And then Kate Blanchett?
Was she up for it?
Cameron Diaz, Nicole Kidman, Naomi Watts, and Catherine Zeta-Jones until they found out her age, her real age.
Lori always has to get that in, Rocco. Catherine Zeta-Jones is not 50, she's 60.
She is.
Okay, so Hugh Grant, who it stars Hugh Grant.
Let me hold up my Parade magazine. Right, I'll see if I can do this show and tell.
So while you're doing that, Hugh Grant only signed on, and he was a big deal at the time because when they rewrote the script, Richard Curtis, he says, just get Richard to come in and rewrite the script. And so they did, and he signed on to that. For Renee Zellweger to play the role, Lori's laughing at herself because she's trying to do show and tell in front of our cameras, but she's off camera.
I can't take a selfie. I don't know how to think backwards looking at a camera. There must be a trick.
This is why you're not good at puzzles.
To your right.
Renee Zellweger gained 17 pounds for the role.
Yeah, there we go.
There you go. And then she also, the book is, she works at a publishing company at the Times, and the publishing company is called... Picador. And
she worked there for real.
She worked there for real for 3 weeks to do research, and they gave her a fake name. No one knew who she was. She had to do things, but she was passed off as the sister of the chairman. So they were just going to let her work there. And she had a picture of Jim Carrey on her desk at the time because she was dating him.
Oh, that's
they
right.
met in Nurse Betty or whatever that was at the time. But Pimberley Press is the name of the publishing company, and they were also the publishing company that published Pride and Prejudice.
Oh,
and Mr. Darcy.
Which, of course, Bridget Jones's diary is basically kind of
Pride and Prejudice.
A modern interpretation of Pride and Prejudice.
Let's see. There is an epic fight scene in it with the two men vowing for her love, Hugh Grant and Mark Darcy. That wasn't choreographed at all. They just did it.
Yeah.
And people were just so amazed. But when they went through the glass, they did have a body double do that. But the rest of it, they did themselves and improvised. Salman Rushdie was in the film.
That's right.
And he was friends with Fleming. So,
Fleming?
Not Fleming. What's her name? Helen Fielding. And so they asked him to be in it, and he said he'd be in it.
You got your poundage wrong.
I did.
It's 25 pounds that Renee Zellweger packed on.
Oh, they said 17 in mine. Depends on...
Wikipedia is not correct. I'm going with Renee Zellweger by quote.
Okay.
That's what she said was 25 pounds. She just ate and ate and ate.
Oh.
Because we know how thin...
Here, now we have a little bit of her.
Okay, let's listen.
Okay. This is the scene at the beginning where she's at her mom's house for the turkey curry buffet. Oh,
yes.
Mother, I do not need a blind date, particularly not with some verbally incontinent spinster who smokes like a chimney, drinks like a fish, and dresses like her mother.
Yummy. Turkey curry. My favorite.
And that was it. Right there. Right there. That was the moment. I suddenly realized that unless something changed soon, I was going to live a life where my major relationship was with a bottle of wine. And I'd finally die fat and alone and be found 3 weeks later, half eaten by wild dogs. Or I was about to turn into Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction.
I've seen this movie so many times. And even though Bridget Jones' Diary 2 bugged us because she was so greasy and dirty, I still love it. And Bridget Jones 3 with the baby, which a lot of people didn't see.
I didn't.
Oh, Lori, it's so good with Patrick Dempsey. It's so
good. Oh, yes, I did see that.
It's so good.
It just wasn't really memorable.
You know, I've watched it again.
Okay, that's why it's memorable.
And the soundtrack for this. Now, here was kind of one of the classic scenes when she was getting it on with Hugh Grant the very first time.
Now, these are very silly little boots, Joan. It's never too late, too late. And this is a very silly little dress. And, the... me, absolutely enormous purse.
No, no, don't apologize. I like them. Hello, mummy.
Granny panties on, remember?
That's right.
Hello, mummy. He's so disturbing.
Listen, that's a very real thing. Like, oh, God, I've got the wrong underwear on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, if you get your granny panties or your period panties or whatever.
Wasn't expecting it today, panties.
Right. And I guess I remember when Hugh Grant was making the rounds for interviews for, what was that movie that he was in?
The recent one?
Yeah, the recent one, The Undoing,
the TV show.
And he talked about, you know, he and Renee Zellweger are still friends, but about how skeptical he was that a Texan could play this British woman. And he said that the first week, her first attempt, she sounded like, he described it as Princess Margaret having a stroke. But within a week, and maybe working at this public, she'd picked it up and you couldn't tell the difference. She was that good at it. And then the fictional Bridget Jones character made such an impact on pop culture in 2016, the BBC named Bridget Jones one of the most influential women of the last 70 years.
Seriously. Oh, gosh. When I think when this movie came out, so it would be 2001, we didn't work here yet.
Nope.
We had developed our nipples, though. We were doing that business.
Did. Yep.
We were selling those.
And I was
working
at Sun Country. Yep. I think maybe you were, too.
And 2001.
Oh, not 2001. No,
you were at the Star Tribune. I was at Business Incentives. And, but we were doing the nipple thing, and we were starting to kind of get a buzz about we should maybe... We were interviewed a lot for the nipples, and
yes,
that's
we
when we were trying to figure out if we should have a TV show.
Of course.
And then we got offered a radio show.
Well,
that's when it all started.
Best thing, yeah.
But I mean, we were obsessed. I was obsessed, and the soundtrack is still good. It's a fun movie if people need a reminder and just something to feel good. Bridget Jones Diary.
I want to know why.
You're still not centered, Lori. It's ridiculous what you're trying to do. Lori's off camera. She's over in the other room.
You're right.
Flashing something in front of a camera that's just not
there
working.
It is.
But it's not.
Hold that pose.
I'm going to have to be Vanna.
Oh. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Lori and Julia Book Club. We have another amazing book for you guys to read. This is Mother May I is the name of it. And New York Times bestselling author Jocelyn Jackson is joining us for her latest book. Hello, Jocelyn. Long time no talk.
Hi, it's so nice to talk to you guys again.
I know.
We've had you on. I think we had you on for Gods in Alabama way back when. And
A little bit ago.
And you've written, is this your 9th or 10th novel now?
It's my 10th novel.
10th novel.
Congratulations to you.
That is so exciting. Okay, tell us about your latest book, Mother May I. We will just say that it is a page-turner. We give it all the accolades. Highly recommend this book.
Oh, thank you so much. It's about a woman named Bree Cabot, a wife and mom, who looks away from her youngest for 1 second, and he's gone. And, you know, usually when that happens, the kid's squirted under a bush to look at a bug, and it's fine. But this time it's not fine. She finds a note that says, go home, don't call your husband, don't call the police, do exactly what I say. And she finds out very quickly the kidnapper is another mother. And if you've read any of my books before, you know this is not a straight-up kidnap and ransom. In my books, the past has teeth, the past has a pulse, and the past is coming for Bree Cabot in this book.
It is so good. It's heart-pounding.
Yeah, it is really a hard one to put down. I mean, I just kept finding, I finished it a couple weeks ago, and it was nice out. And I just kept finding reasons to stop doing what I was going to do so I could just sit
down and reading it.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. Like, when I sat down, I wanted to write a book that you could pour yourself a drink and go out in the beautiful weather and put your feet up and have a great time. But you could also, if you wanted to, read it with your book club because there's plenty of stuff to talk about.
There are plenty of things.
There really is. Was there anything that inspired this book, or was this just a book you just had the idea and then you have such a great imagination you could just run away with it?
Well, you know, every book seems to come from about a million places. It would be fair to say, I don't want to give any spoilers away, yeah. but there's an abandoned amusement park mm-hmm. that features in the book, and I get a lot of inspiration from art. I really like to go to little galleries and museums, and Abandoned America is a series of photographs, art photographs by Matthew Christopher that when I was looking at them, I thought, oh, I need to set scenes. And they're, you know, these abandoned amusement park photos are so creepy.
That is creepy. We're just going to we're gonna agree with you, Jocelyn. Yeah. If you're just joining us, we're with Jocelyn Jackson. The book is Mother May I. And I don't know that we've ever heard that from anybody, that they're inspired writing based on art. You know, I don't know that we've ever heard that before. That's very different.
I like to, I think it's even been amped up because of the pandemic, because right. I like to get ideas from going places, talking to people, smelling different environments, and I haven't been doing a lot of that, so I've been even more dependent on just looking at images of interesting places and things. Sometimes you'll look at a painting and think, like, what is she thinking? And that will start a character in my head, or look at a place and think, like, this place creates this kind of mood in me, and art is the best way to do that.
Yeah, that's so true.
I think it's just...
You know, one of the themes of your book, which I think, I mean, really, it resonates in many, many ways, you know, throughout this country, and many things, and how people behave, but shame. You know, people's shame that they feel, it's a motivator. It's sometimes it's a thing for not doing anything. Right. But talk to us about that.
Yeah, I think that there's this weird thing we have in this country where the way it's fine if everybody is in their nice clothes and it looks good externally. And as long as it looks good on the outside, it doesn't matter what kind of horrible rot is happening behind. And I think that's so backwards. Like, if you actually want to be a good person, the way to do that is to own up to the things that you've done wrong and try to make amends for that. But we do, you know, we shove everything under. And then the things that happen to make sure all those things stay hidden get even worse and worse. So it's like a lie. It just, you know, manifest. Rolls down the hill and gets bigger and bigger and bigger until it's smashing whole worlds and other people.
Well, I still think one of the strongest things that a mom might say to her kid that will really make you pause is, don't you have any shame, or shame on you? You know, like if my mom ever said that to one of us kids, we would be like, it would stop us in our tracks, because it would be about the worst thing she could say to you is accuse
That's
you
some
of
good
that.
Momming, though. I mean,
yeah, right.
We always say, like, I mean, I think in some ways, shame is really good. Like, we shame people for the wrong
right.
things. Like, people should feel ashamed of their behavior, not mm-hmm. who they are, because you can change your behavior. Right. And everybody makes mistakes. Everybody does things that they look back and go,
yeah.
Some more than others, some larger mistakes than others, but mm-hmm. it's still always better, I think, to just own up to it.
For sure.
You know, when this, you're talking about, I was reading another interview that you did, that you don't like so much the writing, you like the revising.
That is the truth. I hate writing, but I love revising. And if you don't write, you don't get to revise.
Well,
so right. I have to write.
I'm thinking, would you ever think of being an editor? But you're such a good author. Why would you do that? And I want to, if you're just joining us, we're with Jocelyn Jackson. The book is Mother May I. It is Revenge Doesn't Wait for Permission is kind of the tagline. And boy, is this a chilling page-turner thriller. Do you, you know, Jocelyn, I don't know if you remember, but you were like one of three. And we've been on the air since 2002, and we've interviewed, I can't even tell you how many authors that actually sat down and wrote us a thank you note.
Oh, well, that's nice to hear that you remember that and that it mattered to you.
It was a big deal, because we were just starting out. It was God's in
Alabama. We were so excited because we'd been fans, you know. Anyway, we were just like thrilled that you were on our show, and then it was made into a movie, you know, with Melanie Griffith, mm-hmm. and we watched that, and then you were, you know, it was just, anyway, we're excited to have you back, and really excited that for for us, you know, a kind of a different book for you with more of that thriller edge.
Yeah, I think that I always used to, when I was writing more Southern fiction as opposed to thrillers, I mean, even in my Southern fiction, you know, I always murdered people and made bodies everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think as I've gotten older, my give-a-carer has broken a little bit, and I don't feel like I have to be so nice, and I can just move those thrilling elements right front and center instead of hiding them in tea parties and dinners.
It works.
It's interesting, too, because I finished this book the same weekend that I watched Promising Young Woman.
Oh, yeah. I loved it.
It was so good, but so very much, you know, justice and revenge, you know, it was like that. It really made me stop and think about, you know, the understanding of, you know, agency and consent, and what is the difference between justice and revenge?
Yeah, and also, like, just, you know, I'm not going to say that there's several, you know, I like to braid narratives, so there's three different fronts going on, but one of them is definitely, like, a woman done wrong revenge story, and that is very satisfying to write. I think any woman who came of age, you know, in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, or even now, my daughter says absolutely nothing's changed. There's something very satisfying about a good revenge narrative.
You got that right.
Are you still getting, like, is this book, you know, are people wanting to make it into a movie?
Oh, yeah. We are. I can't talk about it right now, but things are happening that are very, very exciting. I'll say that.
Does it involve Reese or Nicole Kidman?
No, but it involves a different... I mean, I can't say.
You can't say the
person. It involves a name that you would know. I'll say that.
I, you know what? It makes us so happy that... All right, I'm just going to assume it's a woman. It makes us so happy that women are taking such charge in the acting world of their...
Optioning
books. And there's so many brilliant books written out with strong female characters, and that they're able to get them produced and made and directed. And there's just...
And they're making money. Like, the idea that people would not be interested in a story just because it's a story about a woman, I think that's really finally being challenged.
Yeah.
There's this sort of weird hierarchy where everybody can identify with a story about a white guy, but if you take a step away from that, you lose so much audience. It's like, well, but if it's a woman, men aren't going to be interested. And if it's a person of color, white people aren't going to be interested. Like, it has to be a white man to be an interesting story. And I love that that's being challenged, and that economically, like, we're seeing people will watch stories about
women.
People who look like them instead of just this one thing.
Right. All right. So that is such exciting news. Mother May I is the book. Before we let you go, we got to ask you, what is the last great book that you read?
It's a book called Liberty. Have you heard of it? It's T-I-E, Liberty. It's by Caitlin Greenidge. And it's sort of a sweeping historical book.
Oh, no, like I feel like I've seen I don't know, but I'm going to look it up again, but that feels familiar for some
reason. No, it's not. I looked it up really quick, and I got the author wrong. That's not right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Caitlin Greenidge. That's right, I said it right. It starts in Brooklyn, it goes to Haiti. It is so good.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, your book, Mother May I, is so great, and we love talking to you, and we hope people will buy the book at their local bookstore. We've got two copies. Thank you for giving us two copies to give away to lucky readers. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was great to talk to you, and we'll talk to you for your next book, we hope.
I hope so, too.
All right. Thanks, Jocelyn. Again, it's Mother May I, 651-641-1071. And we come back. Kelly Clarkson sang a song today that must have felt so satisfying to cover. That is a very punky song by Mick Jagger with Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters. And the lyrics are all about COVID masks, the vaccines. It is called Easy Sleazy, and it is rocking. And the single is really great. And he did a big interview with, I think, Rolling Stone magazine,
yes,
just about everything that's going on.
Easy peasy.
He writes, I wanted to share this song I wrote about eventually coming out of lockdown with some much needed optimism. Thank you to Dave Grohl for jumping in on drums, bass, and guitar. It was a lot of fun working with you. Hope you all enjoy Easy Sleazy. So it's a very political, it's a good song with great lyrics and, never take a chance, TikTok, stupid dance, took a samba class, landed on my ass, trying to write a tune, you better hook me up to Zoom.
Oh, wow.
See my Ponzi books, teach myself to cook, way too much TVs, lobotomizing me, think I've put on weight, I'll have another drink, then they clean the kitchen sink. And then talking about escaping the prison walls of the COVID. It's a good song. And I think if you listen to it, you'll like it more and more.
I agree with you.
And remember the last Rolling Stone single, which went to number one, was called Living in a Ghost Town. Do you remember that one, Rocco?
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
So did they record this together or separate, you know?
Oh, well, they might have.
Continents. Probably both been vaccinated.
Mixes in wherever he is, they're able to do it. Yep. That's how people are making music. So anyway, he's getting antsy not being on the road with the Rolling Stones.
Well, can I tell you something?
This is a new single for Just Mick.
Imagine these people who are used to being on the road, mm-hmm, and when they're not on, you know, they're on 18-month tours is something we've learned during lockdown. That's how the average amount of tour that people go on for the big stadium tours. Right. And then they come home for a couple years or maybe a year. But the people are used to, this is taking a hit in their lifestyle, those performers, if you can imagine.
I know. Now, on Kelly Clarkson today, she sang a cover of the Chicks' Gaslighter. And since Natalie Maines wrote that about her cheating dog of an ex-husband, Adrian Pasdar, uh-huh, I have to believe that Kelly really felt good singing this song today. So let's see if she's feeling the words.
Okay.
Why do you think she put that line in?
Honey, that's you, because that is not in the song, because I've listened to the song a million times. Because she's letting
her husband know that these lyrics fit for him, too.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. That was a good catch, Jules.
I listened to that damn song a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I listened to that song a lot, too. I liked that. That album was pretty good.
That is a great album. The whole Gaslighter album. And there's a lot of songs about cheating and being cheated and standing by your man but being dogged.
Imagine the songs that Kelly's writing in lockdown. Oh. We just heard that as a Mick Jagger lockdown song, Easy Sleazy. It's going to make for great music. It is.
You know, I watched The Voice last night. So The Voice was on, Idol's on, and Idol had the Paula Abdul staging.
Oh, I turned to it.
Mm-hmm.
Painful. It was fun to see Paula, but it was painful.
The look on your face is like you just smelled something really stinky.
That show is so tired. You know, tired.
I can't even stand the music.
And I don't know that I appreciate Ryan running around trying to look or be cool and teenagery with his wavy new hair and his new sockless ways.
I thought he's not wearing socks in years. I thought he looked handsome, but it's just the show. I do think it's sorry because I watched
and Katie in her pleather and you know, Paula Abdul literally looked like she had a dog leash with a bow around her neck because she was adding a lot of things to try and cover up. I'm not quite sure what, maybe how different she looks from when Idol was on.
I don't know, but here are the funny Idol stories. So Katie wore a yellow plastic pleather dress. And
blue. It was blue.
Oh, it was blue. Electric blue or something. Why am I thinking
I rented
yellow?
A Mustang the color of that dress. I'm very partial to that crayon blue. I love it. It was a Mustang, and I drove it up the coast of California.
She said if I fart, it's going to come out squishy because the dress was so sweaty. Yeah. And then Simon Cowell was in the news for something like Botox don'ts or something, that he's got droopy eyelids. Did anyone see that?
He's done so much Botox and filler, and he started at such a young age, it's given him kind of like this upside down frown face.
Right.
The frowns he was trying to take away.
I'm thinking of all these old Idol people, but then I turned to The Voice, and yeah. Kelly Clarkson is one of the judges. But she had Kelsey Ballerini sit in for her because she couldn't make it to the live show. But she was coaching these two young women, and she was with Fonzie, or who did Despacito? Louis Fonzie.
Yeah.
And just listening to her, they were doing an Amy Winehouse sing-off. Listening to her do the Amy Winehouse just a cappella. She's so amazing.
Kelsey?
No, Kelly Clarkson. Because yes. Kelly did the coaching part of it.
Coach.
And then it switched over to the evening thing, and Kelsey Ballerini sat in. But it was just, Kelly Clarkson can do no wrong in my book.
True. That's so true.
She
can sing almost anything. We've been playing her karaoke for like a year.
But we've had her music for 20 years.
We've heard like maybe one song that I can remember that we didn't really like. Otherwise,
there was
one. And we're just like, wow, that is the rare song that she didn't just make
it. Yeah, I do remember that. It was just kind of like a pop song or something.
Yeah, and it just didn't work for some reason.
Yeah, but she was putting her fire.
It's amazing. It's such a talent. And then now we've got Christina in the news.
Well, we have Christina. She gave an interview, talked to Health Magazine about being in the spotlight. It's kind of an interesting interview. The thing I really wanted to look at, though, from a music standpoint was Madonna buying The Weeknd's house in Hidden Hills.
Oh.
So I guess she wants to be out in horse country. Because she's got her home in Beverly Hills, but now she's out in Hidden Hills, Calabasas, horse country.
Oh.
We posted the photos and the Christina interview. Enjoy.